House will come to order. Clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. For purposes of the quorum, Representative Nolan. Representative Nolan. Present. Representative Wisnett. Is present. Quorum is present. When we are recessed, we are under third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to the order of business of propositions and motions. Without objection, so ordered. Propositions and motions.
You need to read the message.
Okay, first of all,
messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 1538, 1543, 1591, House Bill 4003, 4002, 4023, 4059, 4082, 4091, 4163, 4167, 4168, 4169, 4171, 4173, adopted SCR 212, HCR 205, passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate, House Bill 4014 and House Bill 4027. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed House Bills 4006, 4041, 4063, 4079, 4110, 4141, 4150, and HCR 206.
We are under a concurrence motion for House Bill 4014. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I request that we concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 4014 and repass the bill.
Representative Gelser moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 4014 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, you will remember House Bill 4014 from just a few weeks ago when we passed it unanimously off of this floor. It was our bipartisan ongoing effort to lift mandates from our local school district. In the Senate, the bill was amended to add a few provisions. It is allowing Education Service District board members to complete a term that they have already been elected to. This is important to ensure that a new election is not required at this time, following our changes to the ESD structure. It requires that if you have decided voluntarily to enroll your 5 or 6 year old child in public school, that as long as that child is enrolled in public school, you need to maintain your child in regular attendance. If you decide that you don't want your child to go to school, say you decided that you wanted to enroll them in kindergarten at 5 years old and it wasn't working for them, you can disenroll your child. The bill just says while your child is enrolled in school, you must maintain regular attendance. And that is for the benefit of that student, as well as all of the other students in the classroom in the school. The bill also requires the State Board of Education to encourage increased learning time. It resolved some implementation date timelines from our bills around student proficiency last time. And it reestablishes the Task Force on Accountable Schools. Colleagues, it's a good bill. It passed unanimously off the Senate floor this morning. I got to watch them do that. I hope that you will join me in voting aye and concluding this work. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All I would say is good bill should
Motion.
Pass.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 4014 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4014, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Let's see. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 4027 and repass the bill.
Representative Thompson moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 4027 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Colleagues, this is a bill we dealt with dealing with medical services to the homeless, and it's a good bill. It went to the Senate. They added a couple of amendments to it, which greatly improved the bill. There's some discussion about one amendment that didn't get in, but still, it's a great bill. And this will probably come back to us in another session. But I would remind you, this is not the only bill that we've ever passed out of here that comes back in a future session for some additional work. Good bill should pass.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Thompson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 4027 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes aye. House Bill 4027, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. We are under third reading of House bills. Chair requests unanimous consent. The rules be suspended and House bills 4017, 4040, 4061, 4131 be read for the third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4017, relating to ignition interlock devices.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4017A. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4017A is brought to you by Mothers Against Drunk Driving. What this bill does is it requires an individual who's convicted of certain crimes and driving under the influence of intoxicants to install an ignition interlock device for 5 years after the reinstatement of their driving privileges. Under current law, an individual may petition the court to reinstate their driving privileges 10 years after having served their sentence, and they are required to have the ignition interlock device for 2 years. What this bill does is it extends that length of time required from 2 years to 5 years. There's no fiscal impact in the 2011-13 biennium, and costs associated with the indigent participants of this program are paid for by the Impaired Driving Prevention Fund in the Addictions and Mental Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. It is anticipated that the indigent costs will plateau at approximately $158,000 in December of 2019. Colleagues, I'd like to thank our co-chairs down in Ways and Means for allowing House Bill 4017A to proceed forward. I believe it's a good bill, and I ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Hunt.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank my fellow chief sponsor on this, the representative from District 57. This is a good bill, and I think hopefully it will set a model, especially as the Public Safety Commission, or whatever they're called, that's been working during the interim so far and will continue into the rest of this interim, is working and looking at how we can have public safety policies that are both tough on crime and smart on crime. I think this bill, the bill that the good representative from District 25 and I passed last session with almost unanimous bipartisan support on this floor, are exactly those kind of things. They focus on how can we be tough on those who are most likely to be violating the law, in this case to drive while intoxicated, but also do it in a way that doesn't bust the bank of the public treasury by having them pay for these devices themselves, or for the indigent drivers to be able to fund that through the increased fees on drunk drivers that were passed last session. That's exactly the kind of way we can be tough on crime and fiscally smart, and hopefully this bill and the bill we passed last session will help provide some guidance for the Public Safety Commission as they're looking not just at how to deal with intoxicated and impaired drivers, but more broadly in the public safety system. I urge your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greg Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4017A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4040, relating to investment for economic development, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4040B. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 4040 continues a very important conversation about Oregon's economic future. In the last year, several of us have been meeting with Oregon business leaders. We traveled around the state asking business leaders, community leaders, entrepreneurs what they needed, what was holding them back from expanding their businesses and hiring Oregonians. We went to a lot of different places around the state, and we heard a lot of very interesting stories. Not surprisingly, some of the details were different in those different places, but some very common themes emerged quickly. Businesses need access to capital, and Oregon's programs need to be more flexible, better coordinated, and more accountable. We heard about how disconnected different programs in Oregon are, how one agency might have a program, but another one had a different one, and they weren't connected, they weren't talking to each other. If we did know about a program in a particular agency, it might have sideboards that were so rigid that prevented it from being deployed to help an urgent and emerging opportunity. We heard about a lot of those examples. House Bill 4040 creates the Oregon Growth Board with specific and qualified membership and charges it with the task of coming back to the 2013 legislature with recommendations. Why should you care? This bill was built based on what we heard in your communities. It will improve how Oregon uses our tax dollars and our lottery dollars to help create jobs and build an economy in which Oregon can compete on the world stage and win. The Growth Board will develop strategies to use public resources as a carrot to attract substantial private sector capital to Oregon. That'll help create more jobs and a more stable and competitive future for all of us. The bill prioritizes coordination, making sure that agencies are talking with each other about what they're doing, about how we're spending money on economic development, and on what Oregonians are getting for that investment. And it brings increased focus on accountability through robust ROI criteria in the decisions that the board makes. Colleagues, I'm confident that all of us would put jobs and employment at the top of our agenda. And I'm even willing to go so far as to say that most of us would agree that the state has a role at times in creating the conditions for job creation and economic development. In fact, voters have even directed us to do that. So the question is how we can best approach that task. And the Oregon Investment Act is an important step as we continue on the task of improving our efforts in that regard. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Co-carrier, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have, as you are well aware, been cautious in my approach to major changes in the way we do things to make sure that it is an improvement. So when it came to this bill, one of the important considerations are what are our assurance that as we make these changes, we will have opportunity to make sure they are the right changes and that they really do help us. So let me go through a few of the things that are provisions in this bill that give me that kind of insurance. One is the makeup of the board. We are not collecting another board. We are ending one board and creating a new board with specific appointments that speak to what this board will be doing. There lots of legislative leadership input into the board. There are specific provisions for folks who have very real-world business capitalization experience and very real-world employer experience, so that when this board goes to work in allocating these dollars to help us grow jobs and economic vitality in this state, we will have people on this board who know how to do that, who have a proven record of doing that. And that is a very important provision for me. The other is, and this is an interesting piece, this bill will do nothing. It ends unless the 2013 legislature reauthorizes its action. In other words, we will all be back talking about this after we have a more complete picture of how this will work. We will be back to actually authorize this board to go to work. We're going to get the board, we're going to get its rules, we're going to get its charge, we're going to get all of these things, and then we're going to come back and say, yes or no, this is what we want. It will automatically end and have to be reauthorized. That's a powerful provision within this particular legislation. I really do believe that we all are concerned with business growth. We all understand that capitalization has been one of the important pieces for folks who are trying to get things, grow their businesses, start their businesses. And it is, by the way, part of our Constitution that the government, state government, would be involved in this, believe it or not. But what we have lacked is coordination. And this brings this coordination piece under one, I believe, responsive board so that we can be assured that this function of government is done in a intelligent way, in a transparent way, and in a way that gives access to the folks who really need this. This is a great first step. We'll be back to talk about it again. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Just want to echo some of the comments that have been made about coordination. We're already spending money on these efforts in this state, and coordinating that to maximize the impact is, I think, very important and very common sense. One of the things that I think is interesting, I looked up some data, and over 30 years, the Kauffman Foundation found that all net new jobs in the United States were created by companies less than 5 years old. And so this is an effort to concentrate on new companies and to help them grow and develop into medium-sized companies and eventually, hopefully, into large companies. I think having a focused statewide effort in this regard is critical for Oregon to increase the chances of having successful startups, not just new startups, but startups that succeed, that survive and grow and create the jobs that we're all looking for. Also point out, I mean, I guess I have a little bit of a bias from Central Oregon. We are working in local coordinated efforts such as the Bend Venture Conference to do some of the things that this bill will do for the whole state. And we've met with a lot of success. One important point about this is that venture capital, I think, in people's minds is often associated with high-tech companies. This is not just about high-technology companies. Certainly, that's an important part of it. But the winner of the Bend Venture Conference this last year was not a tech company per se. It was a unique equipment solution targeting the horse performance market. So if you have some time later, I can explain exactly what that means. One question that has been asked of me is, won't this kind of development happen anyway? And I think the answer is yes, but it will take longer. And we are in competition, make no mistake, with other states that are already ahead of us on this. And some examples include Texas, Utah, Ohio, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Colorado. We need to be competing with these states, not just to attract companies here, which is obviously important, but also to grow our companies. And I just wanted to report one success that I hope we can build on and expand greatly in the years to come through this effort. The Oregon Angel Fund, in coordination with the Oregon Growth Account, has in 4 years, so this is through 2010, we don't have the 2011 data yet, has taken $5 million of private money, matched with $3 million of state money, invested in 18 companies, has zero failures to date, three successful exits, $48 million of additional funds invested in those same companies in follow-on rounds, much of which came from out of state, and a record of 450 new jobs created by these companies. So I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill.
To the bill.
This good bill should pass for a dry vote. I hope you're wildly successful. Great first step, and I like that. You know, I think we need to take a few bigger steps, Representative. We're talking about helping starting and grow business and economic development, and we're getting rid of one board and making another. Well, the word board, you know, we need to mill some timber in this state into boards. Those are the boards we should be working on, and we're not. We know how to effectively use our water, land, and natural resources to help existing businesses and expand on them and have other businesses grow around that. My friend here has talked about other states are ahead of us on this. Well, guess what? They're ahead of us on water development too, and we are doing nothing. This is not enough. This is once again a drop in the bucket, and we're not doing anything. We're not doing anything substantial to radically and rapidly grow business and create opportunities for work in this state this session, and I'm ashamed of it. But this is a good little bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I'm probably going to be the only one here.
To the bill.
To the bill. I got to explain my vote here. I don't expect you to follow along with me, but I will not be supporting this bill. I understand nobody wants to be seen as voting against doing something for small business and economic development. And I understand that apparently the Constitution, some earlier speaker said that we're supposed to be dabbling in economic development with money. I'm not sure if this is what we're supposed to be doing. I have no doubt that streamlining will take place. I have no doubt that this is an improvement over what we have going right now. I have no doubt that there are good, competent people that will be participating in this board and making the best decisions that they can. I know this is going to pass. But here's what happens. When we put state taxpayer dollars into something, when we start funding something, we can't help but politicize it. And what happens, in what should be private transactions, in private businesses, in what should be a free market, in a free society, we end up moving further the other direction. And this is because we end up tilting the playing field towards businesses operated by the politically connected, the politically correct, and the ones that are politically expedient. Solyndra, anyone? I hope that this board will prevent such things as happened back in Washington, D.C. But we really need to take a step back and make sure, and I think there will be some efforts towards this end, to make sure that these programs are working, if you think that these programs are something appropriate for us to do as a state. Politically connected, politically correct, and politically expedient, I know there's businesses outside of that, and I do not blame one of them participating or advocating for these programs, because guess what? We have to do everything we can to survive. As a small business person myself, I have attempted over time to access these funds in various programs, unsuccessfully, I might add, but What convinced me that even further, there is very little intention. There's a lot of talk here, but really when it gets down to it, there's very little intention, really, to let this money go to the normal, everyday business folk, the small business people. And it really makes me question whether we should be doing this with taxpayer money. You want to help with economic development. We all want to help with economic development. But here is what we should be doing. And why not look at opening up our natural resources instead of locking them away to rot while we struggle and grasp for something that's going to help develop our economy? Instead of taking more money from people, the small business owners out there, and putting it into this pot to give away to the, I told you before, why don't we let people keep more of their money so they can have their own economic development program? Let's quit regulating the life out of people. The people who start the small businesses in the state and hire most of the people who are employed in the state. It's getting to the point where only the big guys really have any hope of standing up against these regulations that are literally strangling the life out of people. Instead, we should be looking to put freedom back into the free market system and get to the root of what it is that makes a business think they have to come begging to the government for some capital. Let's get to the root of it. This isn't it. I wish them well. I just hope we're not creating more false hope.
Further discussion, Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think that most of you know that for most of the past 20 years, I started and ran and now no longer run a small business. It is one that was successful in the technology sector. But as the representative from Beautiful Bend said, this bill is not intended to benefit solely that type of
industry. I would like to call your attention to a floor letter that is on your desk, coming out of my office, but it is from the Software Association, the Entrepreneurs Network, and some of the other technology-related associations in the state of Oregon. And briefly, I will read from the letter saying, for Oregon small business owners and entrepreneurs, House Bill 4040 leverages private investment in Oregon companies, improving the opportunities and coordinating access to a fragmented system of economic resources. For Oregon workers, the bill ensures that our state's job creation tools will be more nimble, flexible, and responsive to changing economic opportunities and provide improved support for companies that want to grow and bring jobs to Oregon. And for the taxpayers of the state, House Bill 4040 creates the Oregon Growth Board, which will be responsible for ensuring accountability to statutory goals and benchmarks while reducing the risk of the state's direct investment. Colleagues, I ask for your support of this bill, and I thank the co-carriers and everyone else who put their time and patience into producing it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I've spoken to you, to the bill, sorry. Colleagues, I've spoken to you here before on the subject of minority businesses and the barriers they face. Many businesses that are thriving today got their start in a very different competitive environment, and one that frankly advantaged certain groups and kept others out. In addition, access to capital is a particular problem for these communities, with traditional avenues less available than you might realize. You will notice that this bill does not provide legislative direction to direct capital resources to minority, women, or emerging businesses. I will be watching the implementation of this particular board to determine just how well it does that. It helps those particular businesses. Just a second, excuse me. Especially how fair it ends up being. I'm particularly concerned that capital investors from minority communities will be included in the discussions related to this board created by this bill. I will elaborate, but for now I'll just say I support this bill, and I look forward to further work to support businesses in this important sector of our community. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Support the bill. Applaud the carriers and the drafters. One comment for the collective memory and for the record. I think there is a potential critique when public bodies get involved in economic development that too often the way to predict beneficiaries is based on who can best navigate the labyrinth and who can best grease the skids. And I would just ask us, I think this gives us an opportunity to ensure that going forward, we'll make our decisions and state economic development decisions based on math and the merits rather than based on relationships or who knows whom. Thanks very much.
Seeing no further speakers for the first time, for the second time, Representative Thatcher. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The road that has brought us to this point has been a long one. We started more than a year ago, and as I think about that, I think about the roads we drove to Klamath Falls, to the Dalles, to Ontario, and other parts of the state. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we heard a lot of different conversation, a lot of different points of view on this general question. Even today on the floor, we heard a lot of different perspectives, and I want to thank those who are willing to share them. I think some of the legitimate criticisms and concerns that have been expressed are, in a way, an argument for the bill, that there is a need to improve the way we do economic development to boost our effectiveness and coordination. So my hope is that even those who are who might describe themselves as skeptics or critics, if the bill passes and takes effect, we'll take the opportunity to be involved in the conversation that I hope will continue. And it is a road that we're not through with. If we are successful here, we'll be back with recommendations and further discussion about what makes the most sense. So my thanks go to all of you colleagues and to all the people who've been involved in developing this bill inside the building and out. You've heard about some of the interest groups and stakeholders who've been involved in our conversation, as well as the communities around the state. They have been a huge part of the success of this bill and obviously will play a critical role in the continuing conversation. But in a session that has been characterized by a series of budget choices that I think very few of us are happy with, this is a bill that we can all go home and be very proud of. As we continue to boost the effectiveness, efficiency, and accountability of our economic development programs, I think we can loudly and enthusiastically tell the rest of the world what we already know, that Oregon is a great place to do business. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 4040B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4061, relating to higher education governance and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4061B. Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4061 creates a 10-member Special Committee on University Governance. The Special Committee is charged with reviewing, discussing, and analyzing issues of governance within the higher education system, including recommending legislation for the creation of local governing boards. The committee will also consider potential recommendations regarding consolidation of statewide higher education boards. And my good colleague from Hood River and Co-Carrier will be addressing that aspect of the bill. The committee will consist, as I said, of 10 members, four from the House, four from the Senate, and two from the Governor's Oregon Education Investment Board. It'll be four Democrats and four Republicans. The committee is required to begin work no later than April 15, 2012, and to complete a first draft of its recommendations and report to an interim committee of the Legislative Assembly related to higher education by this August 15, 2012. The committee must then allow 30 days for public comment on the first draft. The special committee is required to submit a report of its findings and recommendations to the governor and the Legislative Assembly by November 1, 2012. The task force sunsets on the day of the convening of the 2013 regular session. The bill directs the committee to consult with national experts to examine best practices in models of university governance and authorizes the committee to accept contributions of funds and assistance from any source, public or private, for this purpose. At this time, the fiscal impact of the bill is indeterminate, but it's anticipated to be minimal. Colleagues, this bill is the product of a two-year process that began when the presiding officers created the Legislative Committee on Higher Education 2 years ago. And the purpose of that bill, task force was to look at potential legislation regarding university governance, most immediately looking at the status of the Oregon University system as a state agency and finding a path to moving it from being a state agency with all the requirements, statutory requirements of an agency, into being what it truly is, that is, a public university system. At that same time, we heard proposals from a couple of the universities to have their own governing boards. We heard testimony around that. We heard some very intriguing ideas regarding such boards. We decided that it would be better to address this in a two phase process. That is, we would first deal with those issues that took us to Senate Bill 242, and then we would come back and take up the issue of local university boards. And colleagues, that is what we're doing today. This is an issue, I don't need to tell you, that took on added urgency back in November when the decision was made to non-renew the University of Oregon president. It increased the urgency, but it did not really change the process that we were embarked on. And that process was that we would take up this issue and deal with it in a very transparent, consultative, and fact-driven process. We will look into the issue of local boards, but let me say first of all that the key issue is not whether or not to have local boards. This country is full of all sorts of different configurations. Some have local boards, some don't. The question is not whether or not to have one, but rather who sits on those boards? Who appoints those boards? What are the authorities of the boards? Though that is really the key set of questions that this special committee will be addressing. And it is pledged by the legislation to follow certain principles. And let me just put these principles on the record for you. First of all, it recognizes the potential benefit of individual university boards. It will ensure that the creation of a local board is the result of a careful analysis of the costs and benefits of such action. Third, if a local board is created, ensure that students, faculty, and other university staff will be represented on the board. Fourth, mitigate potential adverse impacts upon other public universities. And then finally, ensure that the public mission of Oregon's public universities, including access and affordability for residents of this state, is maintained and enhanced. That is the mission that we're setting this special committee with. It will not be easy. There are people in this state who don't want universities to have local boards. There are other people who would like to see universities have boards that are totally autonomous from the other universities. This group has to look at different models, to hear testimony, to deliberate, and come up with what is best for Oregon. And colleagues, that's the path that House Bill 4061 sets us onto. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 4061, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion, co-carrier, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, sometimes when we hear the word task force or work group, our eyes kind of glaze over. And that's why we chose special committee for this one. But indeed, this isn't just your run-of-the-mill committee and or task force. This is a piece of legislation, I believe, that is timely and necessary, and it's vitally important, I think, with where we find ourselves currently within our higher ed structure and within the system within our higher ed system here in Oregon. My co-speaker, co-carrier addressed Senate Bill 242, which last year I think we focused a lot of attention on higher ed, and that was a wonderful work. A lot of hard work went into that piece of legislation, and I think the results that you saw come in that legislation speak for themselves. I'm also hopeful about the outcome of this special committee and what its impact will have within Oregon's higher ed system. And I think that as we look back on the work of this committee, I think we'll all be glad for what they are able to accomplish. Because I believe this comes, again, at a very critical time, and this is the right time for this committee. We cannot leave this session without this piece of governance happening. The rep from Northeast Portland touched on the need to define a pathway for institutions to take should they choose to want to pursue greater independence in exchange for greater responsibility as well. And there are all kinds of criteria that we hope will come out of the work of this committee that we'll be able to look at when we come back here in the 13th session. But I think whatever comes out of this, I think we have to have the mindset that what we're trying to define here and trying to design here is a higher ed governance system that works for Oregon. There's a lot of models out there across the country, and I'm hopeful that this committee will take input from a lot of different sources and come together with a system that's good for us, that provides the freedom, the autonomy, and the security for all of our higher ed institutions, because it still is the Oregon University system. We're not here to advocate on behalf of one institution or another institution. But the part of the bill that I want to touch on that I think I'm as excited about as anything is the opportunity to actually have serious discussions about higher ed governance consolidation. The bill actually calls for, if I can pull it up, the bill actually calls for the committee to come back with specific recommendations on how we can consolidate some of the governance layers that we have within our higher ed system. You'll recall in Senate Bill 242, we passed the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission. They are going to have an increased role. We continue to have the State Board of Higher Ed. We continue to have the Chancellor's Office. All these people are doing some wonderful work, but I think the committee will have an opportunity to look and see what do we really need and what can we live without. And I'm excited to see what kind of recommendations this committee comes back with. I just wanted to point your attention to a floor letter that you didn't receive, but it's an electronic floor letter where we have people such as the Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Business Council, Oregon Business Association, and the Portland Business Alliance all urge your support of House Bill 4061. The business community recognizes that we do need to have this conversation now, and it's an important time to do that in Oregon. And in summation, I just would say that in drafting this piece of legislation, we really walked a fine line. There are those who thought that we went a little too far too fast, and there are also those who said we didn't go far enough fast enough. I think this bill really hits the sweet spot with accomplishing something hopefully substantive that we can all consider when we come back here in the 13th session and come away with the new day of higher ed governance in Oregon that will be good for all of our institutions. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I want to start by saying it's important that we have this conversation at this time. It is the time in Oregon to have a discussion about whether or not we will have local boards. I'm going to be a no on this bill, and I want to explain why. It's not because I'm opposed to the discussion. I'm opposed to a preordained outcome of the discussion. This bill requires that this group come back to the legislature with a recommendation basically about how these boards will be implemented. It is allowing us through a yes vote today to say that the legislature endorses this idea of local boards. I think what is missing from this discussion, and what I would be remiss to not raise, is why we are having this conversation today. It is because Oregon is continuing in its ongoing, chronic disinvestment in higher education in the state of Oregon. It is unfortunate that we have not been able to invest in our university system appropriately so that we can stand here talking about how we are improving access and affordability for all students. And instead, we continue to put our excellent universities, our big universities, our small universities, in a position of having to compete with one another around ideas that are good ideas. We shouldn't be in a place where we have to decide whether something that is good for one is something that is going to be the death knell for another. And unfortunately, our chronic disinvestment, our refusal to give every university in this state the resources that it needs to develop the education that we require for a bright future for this state and its students is what puts us in this place today. One of the quotes from earlier was that the question isn't whether or not to have the boards, it's what will the boards do? I actually respectfully disagree and believe that the first question is, should we have these independent boards? And just as I believe that it would be wrong to say no to boards today, to say that we're not going to have them, I think it's wrong to assume that we are going to have them without having that comprehensive conversation about what governance structure will deliver the most collective benefit for Oregon. And I will acknowledge today that that very well may be independent boards, but we need to be able to have a full and open conversation about that. We need to talk about how in an interrelated system that is deprived of resources, the actions of one university that it takes for its very survival may negatively impact another university. The salary and compensation increase conversations that take place on one campus will impact the ability of a president to govern on another campus and maintain positive relationships with their faculty and staff. Decisions about admission standards and where to recruit students, the ratio of Oregon students to non-Oregon students, the rate at which tuition is set, all of these things impact not just the institution that those decisions are made for, but every single institution in the state of Oregon and the communities in which they live. I will give you an example. I represent the city of Corvallis. For our university to meet, hold up its end of the bargain in the 40-40-20 discussion, we must vastly increase our student population. The city of Corvallis and the people that live there are desperately concerned about what this means for our roads, for our housing market, for the safety of our community, for our local public schools. We need to be discussing those things, and I hope and trust that they will be discussed as this group moves forward. Colleagues, I want to thank those that have worked so hard on this, and I do realize that it's a compromise. I clearly do fall on the end of the spectrum of thinking we're going too far, too fast. I completely respect my friends who are on the other end of the spectrum, who are representing a part of the state that needs more authority and needs it more quickly. And I acknowledge the very real needs of that community and of some of the other universities in this state. So I just rise to explain my no, to thank everyone that's working on this, and ask that as this group works, even though it is being asked to come back with a preordained conclusion, that it is fully vetted, that representatives from all of the universities of the state are included on this panel, and that that panel be willing to step back if in their study they determine that the collective best interests of Oregon are not met by independent boards. However, if they are, you can count on my aye vote next session if we see that that is what is best for all Oregon universities, Oregon students, and Oregon communities. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm a graduate of a small four-year college in the East, and that would be Eastern Oregon University now, and I join my colleague from the Corvallis and Philomath District. I'll be a no on this bill, not because I don't want that conversation. I want the conversation, but I don't want a two-tier system. I don't want those who attend smaller schools wondering why they couldn't obtain something similar in an educational outcome with the two or three largest schools we have in this state. And I watch what happens when to my friends and clients' children who, being raised in a rural area, aren't willing to go to the large city, the Emerald City or the city of Portland or even Corvallis. They have to go to these small schools because they're afraid to go somewhere else. This conversation could result in our not having those small schools, and that is not a result I'm willing to assist in achieving. I urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
It's no secret that I've been involved intimately in the conversation about this issue, and that I am probably on the opposite end of the spectrum from the representative from Corvallis and Philomath in urging action immediately. I have to tell you that I came to support this bill reluctantly, and for all of the reasons that the co-carriers have indicated. I think this bill provides the very best way that we can get for a discussion of precisely the issues that the representative from Corvallis and Philomath think we ought to discuss, and also to help make certain that we do not close the small schools that the representative from the small school in the East is concerned about. I strongly support the continued development and success of the small universities in Oregon. I strongly support the continued success of the university in Corvallis. I strongly support the success of the commuter university, which is, by the way, the largest university in the state, in Portland, where most of the students are part-time and where the university has very different needs than the needs of resident campuses like the one in Eugene or the one in Corvallis, and need to be managed in somewhat different ways. I find myself in a very interesting relationship with others looking at the same issue of how we go about, how we continue in our commitment to higher education reform in Oregon. And I would like to quote from the letter from the business community, which says that they believe that House Bill 4061 is a natural next step in the effort in our commitment to higher education reform in Oregon. Not all universities may want local boards or be in a position to have them, so a framework must be created that is flexible enough to work for all seven universities, regardless of their individual governance plans. House Bill 4061 creates such a process. And then they go on later to say, the special committee process outlined in House Bill 4061 is a constructive step toward identifying and discussing the critical issues involved in establishing local boards. The process will allow the committee to come to the 2013 session with a set of well-vetted and thoughtful recommendations, and they urge an aye vote. And I would note, colleagues, that I'm talking about a business organization which is Portland-centric and three statewide business organizations that are very concerned about the quality of the education that Oregon students get and the quality of the workforce coming to them looking for a job in the economies of the future. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on this bill. Precisely the concerns that are raised by the representatives who have spoken against the bill are the kinds of issues that will be addressed in the process that this bill contemplates and which will come back to this to the next legislature in 2013. And colleagues, if the extent to which they are successful in addressing those concerns is the extent to which their recommendations will be adopted. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
The bill.
This bill doesn't change the university system. It just puts in place a process to carefully review our system of university governance. Our system of managing and governance in higher education has been in place for decades. This bill just takes a step in reviewing how higher education will be structured in a changing academic and fiscal environment. And that academic and fiscal environment that we see now is certainly different than when this system was put in place decades ago. It's important for us to support a system that allows for our public universities to pursue excellence, building on their strengths while still recognizing their responsibilities as public universities. It's also important to make sure that this system, this new system that we hope that we can achieve for this century, is coordinated through the new vision that we have for early childhood through post-secondary education. For those reasons, I think it's important we take this step now, and I support this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Most of what I needed to say has been said, so I'm just going to arise in opposition to the bill. I'm concerned about the specific language that purports to, I think it's the word shall is the part that gives me heartburn, and I want to make sure the legislative record does not mirror the testimony of the U of O Foundation that said this creates, quote, an irreversible path towards an institutional board. That is absolutely not what the bill says. So their comments notwithstanding, I would like to use a visual aid.
Representative Clem requests unanimous consent to use a visual aid.
Oh, that would be nice.
Without objection.
Thank you. And I need to declare a possible conflict of interest.
No, it's too late.
Is there any objection for a visual aid?
And
Hearing none, so ordered.
And I need to declare a possible conflict of interest.
Representative Clem declares a potential conflict of interest.
Yes, I'm planning to apply for U of O's private board once they form it. I'd like to be on it as a member, and this bill might affect me.
It will not be noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the previous question.
Seeing no one else in the queue, Representative Dembro, do you wish to close?
I do, and I'll be brief, Mr. Speaker. I want to do two things. First, I want to address the concern of that some of the opponents have. I want to really stress that this bill is dealing with pathways to local boards for those universities that choose to have them, and it gives them the possibility of having a path to a local board as long as it meets certain criteria. You should know that when we had a hearing on this bill in the Higher Education Committee, Eastern Oregon University President Bob Davies came and spoke in support of the bill, and what he said to us was that he had no interest on behalf of his university in having a board at this time. He said at some point he might want to. He was not going to speak for those universities that wanted to have a local board right now. But what he did ask us was that we make sure that whatever system we come up with does not harm his university. And that is something that we are all committed to doing. I just want to point out one that has always been inherent in this bill. We called it out even more specifically in the very last set of amendments to the bill, which say that in consultation with all seven presidents of Oregon's public universities, identify potential impacts upon other public universities and develop a detailed plan to address those impacts. Colleagues, this bill has the kind of safeguards that we need. I urge you to vote for it. And just before I close, I want to thank all of those people and organizations that worked with my good co-chair over the last several months on this bill. I can't tell you how arduous a process it was. But people from all over the political spectrum, all over the state, worked with us on this. And I think we came up with the very best product that we could at this time. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 4061B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4131, relating to ratio of state agency public employees to supervisory employees and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4131B. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 4131 direct certain executive branch agencies with 100 or more employees that have not attained an 11-to-1 ratio of non-supervisory employees to supervisory employees to increase the ratio of non-supervisory employees to supervisory employees by at least one non-supervisory employee by no later than October 31st, 2012. If the ratio of an agency remains less than 11-to-1 after this date, then the agency is prohibited from filling supervisory employee positions until the agency has increased the ratio by at least one additional non-supervisory employee. and by October 31st of each subsequent year must lay off or reclassify the number of supervisory employees needed to increase the agency's ratio by at least one non-supervisory employee. Okay, and just to continue a bit longer with the LFO language, and then I'll explain the bill. The bill provides for an exception to the ratio attainment requirements if, upon application to and determination by the Department of Administrative Services, a state agency demonstrates that an exception is warranted due to unique or emergency circumstances. The bill requires that the exceptions granted are to be reported to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, the Joint Interim Committee on Ways and Means, or to the Emergency Board. Colleagues, just some background to this bill. You may remember that in the last session, we passed House Bill 2020, which established the goal of reducing the number of middle managers in the larger state agencies to achieve a supervisor-to-worker ratio of 11 to 1. This bill passed unanimously in the Senate and with only two no votes here in the House. What this bill does is it moves the process along in terms of how this goal will be met. It takes into account three things. First of all, we continue to have a budget shortfall in this state, and the budget rebalance plan calls for a reduction of more than $25 million in state agencies. This bill calls on the agencies to make those reductions with the goals of House Bill 2020 in mind. Second, right now there are a lot of vacancies. There are a lot of vacant positions in the agencies as a result of the hiring freeze and just a lot of retirements that are happening for demographic reasons or economic reasons. This is a good time to restructure, and we need to take advantage of this now. Third, we certainly can cut through attrition, and that will deal through in the short term. But if we're really concerned with long-term efficiencies in our state agencies, then we need to seize upon this opportunity and use this process to meet those goals of getting to the 11 to 1. This bill creates a process that provides clarity and a step-by-step march to reach those goals. The results of this process will be a leaner management structure for the agencies. The ratio is set up so that it creates disincentives for agencies to have multiple layers of management. It creates incentives to flatten the organizations. Second, it phases in the reduction steadily over the next few years. Third, it gives the agencies the flexibility that they need to meet these goals. Okay? These are average targets for the large agencies. And we put in a safety valve that if an agency, due to its specific unique needs and for emergency reasons, cannot meet those goals, it can get a waiver from DAS in order to get those exceptions. But they have to report to us, which will, I think, keep them, make it more likely that they will stay on track in moving towards greater efficiency. It will not affect managers who are not supervisors. I know there are concerns that some of the positions in the agencies are technical positions. They're technically management, but they're not supervising anyone. They are not counted as supervisors. They are counted as non-supervisors in this plan. This is a plan that focuses on frontline service. At a time where we have to make reductions, we want to make those reductions as far away from frontline service as possible. That's what this bill does. And finally, it initiates a process that will lead to further long-term changes that will help to make our agencies more efficient, more effective, and more responsive to the really serious needs that our citizens face. Colleagues, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 4131 as amended, and I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I wanted to take about 15 minutes and explain why I'm changing my vote from the Ways and Means to vote from no to yes. This will require several visual aids and family history I know you all will be intrigued about. I represent a rural area, and I sat on Ways and Means for Natural Resources, and natural resource agencies have unique outposts, if you will, in my district, where there's only a couple of folks doing a lot of work, and that ratio puts an undue burden on natural resource agencies. However, through the good work of many on this bill, it was explained to me that there is an exception, and so for rural areas of Oregon and for natural resource agencies, this still sets a goal. I still have 14 minutes to go, Mr. Speaker, but I'll yield that time.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I was a no on this vote in ways, to the bill. I was a no a vote on this bill in the Ways and Means Committee, and I will be a no vote on the floor today, and I feel like I need to put some explanation into the record. I am very concerned with terminology like managers, supervisors, and frontline workers. As we struggle to balance our expenditures and our revenues, we have some very complicated issues in many of our agencies, including our larger agencies, and I think that it's critically important that we look at the job responsibilities of individuals rather than just the titles as we work through these difficult decision-making processes. Many of our employees who might be termed supervisors or managers are also carrying caseloads. They are frontline workers as well. And the rather arbitrary nature of setting a number is just very concerning to me. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Demereaux, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4131B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent to return to the order of first reading of memorials and resolutions. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
SCR 212 established lien deadlines for pre-session filed legislative measures for the 2013 regular session of the 77th Legislative Assembly.
Resolution read first time is referred to the co-speaker's desk for referral. Final readings, memorials, and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 15-38 related to education and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1543 related to transportation and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 1591 related to travel and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time or passed to the co-speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent to read Senate Bill 1508 immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Senate Bill 1508 relating to beverage containers and declaring an emergency.
Question arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1508. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm going to go pretty fast today because time is short. And some of you will recognize this as a fairly familiar piece of legislation. In 2007, the legislature passed Senate Bill 707, I think you remember, that expanded Oregon's bottle bill to include water and flavored water containers. It also made another substantive change which required retailers to take back any brand of beverage container they sold if they sold that type of beverage, not necessarily that specific beverage. This was easy, was a very consumer-friendly thing, but it changed the entire dynamic behind the curtain of what goes on between the distributor and the grocer in this redemption process. To accommodate this new actual model, the legislative, and it was a mandate, the retailers and the wholesalers took on a massive effort to consolidate 5 independent container collection organizations into a single statewide cooperative that could efficiently handle this redemption and exchange. There are challenges to any new system, and distributors that have chosen not to join this statewide cooperative are causing a duplication in accounting and redemption and pickup services for these grocers. The result is that anywhere there's a non-member distributor, the grocer must duplicate the sorting process between those that are in the cooperative and those distributors that are not. This causes more work for grocers, and I will tell you, the grocers get nothing, zero, from Oregon's bottle bill. They do the nickel, they do the exchange, they dedicate a lot of space in their grocery stores to making those exchanges. They have done it for 40 years, and I think it is a small thing when we made this massive changes to give them a break and not ask them to do more duplicate sorting. And that's what this bill speaks to, and that's why I keep bringing this bill back to you. The bill cuts that duplication and fixes the problem of doubling the workload when you've got a grocer in an area that has competing systems of distribution, or at least two or more. What SB 1508 does not do, is require distributors to join a statewide cooperative. It does ensure that the grocers will not have to make a separate container sort. In place of separate container sorts, the grocers will continue to provide an accounting of the quantity of each brand that is processed. And upon presentation of the accounting, the distributor would pay the grocer the appropriate amount of deposit for those containers. That's what this bill does. The other important piece in this bill is a new feature that, for the first time, requires those who, by the way, the bottle bill is entirely privately managed. There is no agency that's doing a bottle bill in Oregon, unlike other states. But for the first time under this bill, there would have to give a gross accounting of how many bottles and cans were sold in the state and how many were redeemed in the state. This is a measure of our redemption rate, and it is an important piece of information that has never been available before. And within this bill, that is one of the requirements. And it is, whether you're in the cooperative or not, you will, under this bill, need to make an accounting to OLCC as the agency that would receive it, and it would give us our recycling data that we do not have now. Please, I urge and I support for 1508. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not.
Got everybody here we need.
Sure. Hannah. And Robles on the side aisle.
Got everybody?
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting yes is wand.
Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Barnhart votes aye. Senate Bill 1508A. Speaker Hannum votes no. Senate Bill 1508A, having received the constitutional Representative Olson, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Yeah, I'd like to change my vote to no.
Representative Olson changes his vote to no. Senate Bill 1508A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since floor time is going to be 11 a.m. tomorrow, colleagues, Republicans will caucus at 10 a.m., 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, because we like to be in alliance with our friends. 10 a.m. caucus, House Democrats, Democrats in the morning. Thank you.
Further announcements? Remonstrances? Adjournment, Representative Jensen, 11 a.m. Thursday, March 1st, 2012.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 11 a.m. Thursday, March 1, 2012.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 11 a.m. Thursday, March 1st, 2012. Without objection, the House is adjourned.